Welcome to the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. I'm Shade Metlin, back in the studio again, by myself once again. Hopefully we'll all work our schedules out here soon and get Katie back in here for future episodes. But one more time, just me to talk about so much stuff happening with JMU basketball in particular. That'll be the main focus of today's episode. So much to talk about when it comes to Duke's. Their NCAA tournament run, the subsequent departure of Mark Byington on the women's side, some news as well. We'll dive right into it. Recapping first, just incredible postseason run performance for the Dukes, even taking a blowout loss to Duke in the second round of the NCAA tournament into consideration. Can't say enough about, you know, what this 2023-24 James Madison men's basketball team accomplished over the course of the past few months, and then even getting into March. They got it done in March as well. I think, you know, exceed expectations, and, you know, lots of teams end up losing to Duke in the NCAA tournament through the years, and, you know, JMU falls into that category. But we can look at the victory, first-round victory, convincing, impressive, all-around. One of the most memorable performances in the history of the program on Friday against Wisconsin. Let's break that one down to start with. You almost had to wonder going in if JMU was too popular of an upset pick going into that one. You know, everybody picks a 12-5 every year. JMU was a 12 seed, obviously, against number 5 Wisconsin. And it seemed to be the one that everybody was picking, you know, the vast majority of the country. It was a popular pick to have JMU over Wisconsin. Sometimes when that happens and everybody's picking one, and Seth Davis on CBS, as soon as the bracket's revealed, says, you know, that's my upset pick, Virginia, or, you know, JMU over Wisconsin. You hear that so much if you're Wisconsin. Any chance of overlooking the Dukes is gone. They'd heard, literally from the moment their name came up on the board for the selection Sunday, that they were going to get beat by this JMU team. And sometimes that's the recipe for just completely waking up the quote-unquote favorite. What we end up seeing on Friday in Brooklyn from JMU is that JMU should have never really been considered an underdog in that game. They were a better team. They were deeper, more athletic, more physical. They didn't even shoot the ball particularly well. If they'd have shot it well, I think they could have, you know, won that game going away. They end up winning it by double digits. Really just looked the part of an NCAA tournament team and a team that could win 32 games in a season, which they did. The Wisconsin game being the 32nd victory, making them 32-3 at that point going in. You know, just looking at what JMU did against Wisconsin, jumping out on them to start with. They never trailed in that one. Never trailed. It was a balanced effort. You look at, you know, who did what for JMU. 4 players, double figures, led by Terrence Edwards, 33 minutes. He went 5-for-13 from the field, so not like his most efficient game even. He'd been very efficient this season, but 5 rebounds, a couple assists, a couple steals, a good effort as he kind of led the way. But it wasn't one of those situations where it was, this guy's like a breakout star of March now. Everybody's going to know this guy's name. You can't beat him when he's this hot type of situation. It wasn't like that. You know, he has 14. Julian Wooden, 12 points. TJ Bickerstaff, 12 points, 9 rebounds, which played a role in him. You know, by the end of the Duke game on Sunday, he had broken the program record for rebounds in a season. So congratulations to TJ on that one as he wrapped up his JMU career. But he has a very good game against Wisconsin on Friday, 12-9. But none of these are guys having their best game ever. You know, Noah Friedel gets in a little foul trouble, hit some big shots in that game though, 8 points for him. Raekwon Horton off the bench with 8 points. Michael Green, returned to Brooklyn, or he's from the Bronx, returned to New York, playing in Brooklyn, a lot of family and friends there. 11 points from him off the bench. You know, he didn't get a ton from Jalen Carey. He didn't get, you know, a ton from Xavier Brown in those games. That was fine. You know, everybody kind of played their role. They went nine deep. You know, Brian Randleman only played a few minutes. They tightened up the rotation maybe a little bit in these NCAA tournament games. But, you know, strong performances across the board. JMU showed their depth. They showed what they're capable of doing. They showed why everybody's picked them, why the point spread was not wide in that one, despite, you know, maybe not knowing exactly what to think about JMU going in, just because of the schedule they played. It was one of the weakest schedules in the country. But you kind of bookend it with those wins at Michigan State to start the season, against a Wisconsin team that played in the Big Ten championship game, a Wisconsin team that's beaten Purdue this season, that was ranked as high as number 6, I believe, this season. You know, definitely spent some time in the top 10. Just a Wisconsin team that was up and down a little bit, but, you know, you can't really knock where JMU for winning. You can't find too many flaws with this win for JMU, is what I'm trying to say, is that, you know, I think back a little bit too, you know, I being a Kansas grad, I'll go back to my own personal history, but it was a little bit of like 2007 football season, Kansas, you know, finishes 11-1. People are like, yeah, but they played bad schedule, so they're not getting into the, you know, BCS championship or anything like that. But then they go and they beat Virginia Tech in the Orange Bowl that year. And Aqib Talib, thing he says when it's over is, you know, you going to say who we play now, who we beat now? Like, we beat number 3 Virginia Tech. I think we proved it. It was a little bit of that same feeling for the JMU men's basketball team, I think, after the Wisconsin game. I mean, I think there was a little bit of that, you know, the celebration you saw from that team as they, you know, went to their fans on the side of the court, things like that. It was, I think, almost less a celebration of like, yeah, we just won this game, we're moving on to the NCAA tournament, and more about like, just, hey, what are you going to say about us now? We've played, we've beaten everybody we've played, essentially. You know, only lost 3 games all year. We've proven it now. What are you going to say about us? And I don't know if that led to a little bit of a letdown the next night out on Sunday against Duke. I don't think it did. I think there's a lot of factors to play it into. JMU and Duke playing out the way it did. But, you know, get into that one. We'll break it down a little bit. Not that there's a ton to break down. Just, you know, not JMU's night on Sunday against 4-seeded Duke. They get into that one. And basically the exact opposite. They trail the entire way. They get down, you know, a couple buckets early and are just really trying to get out of a hole the whole way, and turns into a Duke blowout in this one. JMU just was never really in it, never really had much of a chance. 93-55, Blue Devils. You know, it will always be kind of, you know, something we wonder about if this was a letdown game after, you know, JMU advances. They'd reached so many highs in the past couple of weeks that, you know, at some point there was going to kind of be hard to like continue to have the focus and continue to have just bringing it like that every single time. But you look at, you know, the other factor is, I think Duke showed they're a much better team than Wisconsin. They're legit. They are a Final Four contender, although going to have a hard time with Houston, I believe, Friday night in the Sweet 16 round. But, you know, I think Duke is, you know, up there with a lot of teams in the country. To me, there's always been 3 teams that are a step above everybody else. That would be UConn, that would be Purdue, that would be Houston. And then I think there's a handful of teams in the next second tier. And I think Duke's shown so far that you can throw them into that group, along with the North Carolina, Tennessee, programs like that. This Duke team in particular, I think, is good. And I think clicking at the right time. Jared McCain, freshman guard, just went off on the Dukes. You know, really, really just couldn't be stopped. He got too many open looks. That's true, especially early. Kind of let him get going. But 10 for 15 from the floor, 8 for 11 from three-point range, 30 points, 5 rebounds for him. Just a really insane performance from a freshman in the NCAA tournament. And it goes to show you the different level of recruits that programs get. Because, you know, JMU, if they bring in a freshman, they're trying to develop him over several years. You know, a freshman that comes to Duke is trying to have this moment in March, like, for 1 year, and then move on to the NBA, which, you know, Jared McCain's definitely improving his NBA stock right now. 8 three-pointers from him, 4 from Tyrese Proctor, who had 18 points, 5 assists. Also, the backcourt just really got it done for Duke. Kyle Filipowski, the center, had a pretty good game, but, you know, it was not that Duke's size was overwhelming for JMU. I think Filipowski was a tougher matchup than Wisconsin Stephens Crowell, you know, basically the same size, similar build, and similar skill sets to some degree, but I think just Filipowski is just better and more skilled than Crowell and was able to do what he did. But JMU really slowed down Mark Mitchell, the power forward for the Blue Devils, who had a really good game in the first round against Vermont. I thought he might be the guy that would hurt JMU the most, and did not end up being the case at all. Just with his size and strength and athleticism, I thought he was going to be a pretty tough matchup. I was wrong. It was McCain, the guy who really did it. But you look at Duke, 14 for 28 from three-point range. Very uncharacteristic for JMU to allow, one, that many three-pointers, that many three-point attempts, and two, for a team to shoot that well if they're shooting that many threes. You know, JMU's held its opponents under 30% from three-point range throughout the season. 50% performance for the Dukes, or for Duke University, not the Dukes. You know, they just shot lights out, and, you know, it was uncharacteristic for JMU in that regard. I don't know if JMU would have beaten Duke even if it was a normal shooting night for either team, but I think obviously could have been a more competitive game. You know, just I think a lot of emotions came out for JMU on Friday. So maybe it was a little bit, I don't want to say let down, but it could have been flat to some degree on Sunday. But certainly a dynamic performance from Duke that, you know, I just don't think very many teams in the country were beating them that night. Whether JMU could have, like, made it more of a game on a different night remains to be seen. We'll never know. But I think in the end, years from now, decades from now, people aren't necessarily going to be talking about, you know, people aren't going to reflect on the season and this NCAA tournament and reflect on Duke blew out JMU in the second round. People are going to remember that JMU won in the first round, that they advanced to the round of 32 for the first time since 1983. This program won 32 games, something it's never done before, and quite frankly might never do again. Winning from start to finish, 2 wins over Big Ten teams, the Sun Belt Conference Tournament Championship, that performance in that championship game by Xavier Browns, one people were going to talk about for a long time at JMU. So that kind of closes the book on this particular JMU team, and then immediately opened the door on what happens next for the Dukes, because I was not even back in Virginia before the news broke that Mark Byington was leaving JMU for Vanderbilt. I think not surprising that he left, and left quickly for a Power 5 job. And, you know, really, you know, really to the point where, you know, there's always been high major jobs, there's always been mid-major jobs. But I think what we're seeing this week too is that now there's another tier. It's not just high major leagues, the Power 5 plus the Big East and plus, you know, Gonzaga and a few teams you want to throw in there that play and spend and compete to that level. You know, right now, if somebody has an opportunity to take a Big Ten or a SEC job, they almost have to do it, like, just because of knowing, you know, if you go to one of those schools, what level you're going to be playing on for the next few decades. And there aren't a whole lot of other places outside of the SEC and the Big Ten where you can say that. Even talking about the SEC, even, or the ACC, the Big 12, the Pac-12 is going away. You know, who knows what to think about conferences like the Atlantic 10 and AAC going forward, the Mountain West, what any of this is going to mean for them. It's really hard to know. And so I think that had to be probably part of the intriguing part, that you get an offer that quickly, you can't pass it up. You can't even really take time to think it over if you're Mark Byington. And you see it with Dusty May leaving Florida Atlantic for Michigan after he kind of sat pat last year after Florida Atlantic's NCAA tournament run to the Final Four. But you get a job offer from Michigan, you can't really turn it down at this point, because it, like I said, those are the only places that you know what level you're going to be at for the foreseeable future. And, you know, the money's going to be there. The resources are going to be there. You're going to have what you need to at least make an attempt to win. And, you know, I see the comments too, like that. I see, you know, oh, like lateral move or step down or something to go from JMU to Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt has not been winning. They didn't win under Jerry Stackhouse. They struggled for a while now, but it's a place where it's been proven you can win. I don't see any reason to think that Mark Byington won't win at Vanderbilt when you just look at what he's able to do, what he was able to accomplish at JMU, turning that program around immediately from last place to a first place finish in this CAA regular season, to back-to-back 20-win seasons, to setting the record for most victories in a season at JMU, not just setting that record, absolutely destroying that record by 8 games. You know, you see what he's done there. You see he's won at programs with no history of winning, no recent history anyway of winning. He's won at places where the resources weren't as good as some of his peers or the teams that they wanted to try to compete at. And now he's going to an SEC program where the money's going to be there. The NIL is going to be there. He's going to have things that he didn't have before. I think particularly the NIL resources to offer in recruiting. And, you know, frankly, if I was looking for somebody to take over and I was going to look just beyond, hey, not only did they win, how did they do it? How did they do what they did? Very few people in the country, if anybody, has been as adaptable and has been able to figure out how to recruit in a new age of college basketball and college sports than Mark Byington. He's really done an unbelievable job in that regard when it comes to figuring things out, because you saw so many people who like either just didn't want to touch NIL, or they didn't want to deal with it, or they wanted somebody else to handle that for them, or if they didn't have the NIL funds that they wanted or needed, they were just going to complain about that and use that as an excuse for not getting what they wanted to do done. And JMU has an NIL situation. They're getting some money to some people. It's there, but it's fledgling and it's modest, and it doesn't compete with the Power Five schools. And I say that maybe also talking out of both sides of my mouth a little bit here, but I don't necessarily believe that a lot of what we hear about the high major schools and what people are being offered NIL, or, you know, possibly they're being offered, but maybe not ever getting that money. Like, I think that's overblown. You know, you break it down to money, and they're, people are acting like everybody who transfers to a high major school is getting offered hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I just don't think that every high major school is now spending millions on their roster. Yeah, I just don't necessarily think that case. I don't think it adds up necessarily. But that being said, they are getting something, and it's more than what JMU can offer. Which leads back to what Mark Byington was able to do, and he really worked the portal well. He recruited high school well, and he developed players. That's the three things that if you're going to try to put together a roster – Like, what are you looking for in a coach? And he did that. He recruited guys like TJ Bickerstaff, like Takal Molson, guys who came from high major programs. And he found the guys that were looking for something that JMU could offer, which was, you know, it might be a little bit of money. It's not to say those guys didn't get some NIL money, and it's not to say that those guys didn't want some, but it wasn't necessarily their number one priority for where they were looking. And, you know, that made a huge difference. That made a huge, huge difference for JMU in that regard. Just knowing the guys to recruit and not wasting their time on people who they weren't going to get because of NIL situations, or recognizing, you know, what was happening. Because you can go back to the year before this, like last year, you know, Zhao Atuka is the guy JMU was recruiting out of the portal from Marist, who transferred to Wake Forest, and it really came down to JMU and Wake Forest. And it was known, I think, by the JMU staff from the beginning, like, hey, if I got the offer from Wake Forest, I was going there because they were going to be able to provide a little NIL as the ACC, as everything else. And, you know, JMU put the effort in to recruit this kid, but, you know, with the understanding of where things were going, they weren't wasting their time. They had a chance, but they knew the reality of the situation as well. And I think, you know, those are the things that Mark Byington has done a really, really good job. Now put him at a place like Vanderbilt, where he's going to be able to at least match what, you know, some of the people he's recruiting against are trying to offer. He's also going to be able to offer the things that he offered people to begin with. Just, you know, whether it be, hey, you're going to get an opportunity to play a freewheeling style of offense. You're going to get more shots up. You're going to get a chance to improve some things that will make you a more viable pro prospect, which is what TJ Bickerstaff did. He came to JMU to show that he could be an offensive player and take that to wherever he ends up, probably in Europe or somewhere playing professional basketball. You know, some guys just wanted the opportunity to win when they only had one season left. Some guys wanted the opportunity to develop a little bit more and be closer to home. I think that's the most, you know, impressive thing that Byington did as came to recruiting was, you know, not only recognizing the players that JMU wanted and players that could help JMU, but also recognizing how they could help the players in a way that they convinced them to come to JMU. And it was more than just the facilities. It was more than, you know, having better resources than a lot of mid-majors. They were convincing guys who maybe weren't looking at other mid-majors to look at JMU. And, you know, I think he's going to be able to do very similar things at Vanderbilt. And we'll get that program back to the NCAA tournament before it's all said and done. So, you know, congrats to Mark there. It'll be interesting to see who he takes from his staff to Vanderbilt. Be interesting to see who ends up coming to JMU now as that search is on. Latest I've heard on JMU men's basketball coaching search would be that they've locked in on four names. The committee's trying to set up interviews with those four people. I don't know who those names are at this point. I think you can kind of probably eliminate some people. I don't think Rob Jones from Norfolk State's going to be in the mix. He would like to be, but he's not. Griff Aldrich from Longwood, somebody who I think probably would have made some sense, but doesn't seem to have a lot of interest of leaving Longwood, especially not for a school maybe where a lot of the resources are going to go towards football as opposed to basketball. So those two guys who are from in-state who have taken their teams to multiple NCAA tournaments, probably not going to happen. It doesn't sound like they're in this mix of the four names that's been locked on. I'm trying my best to find out who those four are. Haven't nailed down it, at least to the degree that I'm comfortable putting out that talk. But I think things are going to move fast. I think, you know, the process is well underway, and we'll find out more probably in the coming days about who's going to be JMU's next coach. And we'll see if those, whoever it is, can maybe re-recruit Out of the transfer portal, Jalen Carey and Xavier Brown are both in there. I would think a new coach would want to try to keep those guys around, sell them on what JMU has to offer, which they already know. But it makes sense for them to be in the portal to see what their options are. Terrence Edwards, we can talk about him a little bit. The Sun Belt Player of the Year is also in the portal. He's also in the draft, or heading to the draft when that, you know, becomes official. I would imagine he's probably played his last college basketball game, but it makes some sense, especially considering the programs that he's getting looked at. You know, it sounds as though Byington has definitely, you know, said, hey, if you're going to stay in college, you can certainly come play for me at Vanderbilt. But we'll see how it goes for him. I think, you know, the question is probably going to be if there's an NIL deal that matches what a pro salary might be, it might be intriguing. I don't know if that's, you know, a guarantee thing for him. The G League does not pay particularly well. He can make pretty good money in Europe, but I would imagine he's a guy who wants to maybe try his hand at the G League, and have that opportunity to get called up to the NBA. So doubtful he's probably going to get drafted, but you never know how things might go as he, if he gets into combines, things like the Portsmouth Invitational, to kind of show what he can do. Definitely a kid who's going to play pro ball somewhere, in the near future, but we'll see where he ends up going and what happens there. But he has played his last game for JMU. That's, you know, about a 99% certainty that, you know, even a new coach comes in and is very impressive. I don't think we'll see Terrence Edwards, you know, enrolling in grad school at JMU anytime soon. That said, you know, you look at the roster and, you know, the kind of core you could bring back if you are a coach that, you know, wants to retain this roster. I mentioned Carey. I mentioned Brown. Those two guys have plenty of experience. Raekwon Horton, I think, potentially poised for a breakout season next year, should he stick around. You know, beyond that, Justin Amati and Quincy Allen both missed essentially the entire season for both of them. In the entire season for Amati, Quincy Allen didn't really play much. Two very talented players that, you know, you've got a solid core here if you bring people back and then can hit the portal for some more guys to kind of round this out. But really too early to tell what a new coach is going to want to do before we know who that coach is. But I think we'll find out a lot soon along the lines of, you know, who Jamie will hire and who will come in new and who might come back as far as the Jamie basketball roster. Quickly, before we wrap it up, just a few news and notes things on the Jamie women's basketball team. Didn't talk much about. They had a first-round loss, WBIT, to Stony Brook. Ended the season for the Jamie women last week. They're well into the offseason. Sean O'Regan, I've texted with him a little bit, haven't had an in-depth conversation. He's very busy this week with some things. Somewhat surprising news about the women on both of these fronts, a little bit surprising. Point guard Chloe Sterling had a solid sophomore season, moved into the starting lineup late in the season for the Dukes, but she goes ahead and enters the transfer portal. So they'll be looking for somebody to, probably for a guard to come in and take some of her minutes. They bring a ton back on the women's side, assuming no more portal entries. Not to assume that, because you can't assume anything. But if there's no more portal entries, they should bring back a ton of talent and a ton of production from last year's team. But they will miss assistant coach Neil Harrow, who was the associate head coach here for Jamie the past 2 years. Was a very strong addition to the staff. I think, you know, had a lot to do with the run to the Sun Belt title a year ago. He's moving on. He's going to join the LA Sparks of the WNBA as an assistant coach. He's previously worked in a lot of scouting for WNBA. He has a lot of connections there. So that's a role that fits for him. And you know, you have success, you're gonna lose some people to jobs like that. And Sean O'Regan said he's got a couple people in mind to bring in and talk to about replacing Harrow. He'll probably extend that search out though a little bit. He said he's going to really look to find the very best to come in and do that, because it's a good staff, but it's been a young staff outside of Harrow. So that could be a key hire for O'Regan here in the coming days as well. But I think that'll probably happen relatively quickly, because everything happens quickly in college sports now with the portal open, everything else. But I'll talk to Sean in depth next week. And by the time we sit back down here for another episode of the Purple and Bold podcast, I'll have, you know, a lot to talk about as far as, you know, where the women's basketball team has gone and will go. And, you know, hopefully we'll know some more about the men's basketball hire. We'll get into some spring football stuff. Plenty to talk about in the coming days and weeks. It doesn't even slow down even in the spring for JMU. But in the meantime, I'm Shane Metlin. You've been listening to another episode of the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. And thank you for tuning in.